When you come to Hollywood to be an actor or a comedian or a writer, you expect that you're going to be exploited in some way, used. But you think if you take enough of these crappy gigs, it's going to pay off and you're going to get the dream job. That's why I came here. But I found myself on the side of the people who exploit other people. I work in daytime court TV. People think I'm paid to find strong cases for the courtroom. Not true. I am paid to exploit stereotypes. If I book someone who's black, they have to be really black. If you book someone who's gay, they have to be flaming. You know, we like them when they're in drag. We book baby mamas, baby daddies. We book Chewbacca from Hollywood Boulevard. You know, tribute artists. They don't like to be called impersonators. They like to be called tribute artists, hoarders, cutters. And the freakier, the better. And my job is to book them. We had a competition in the office. You know, we were like, oh, who can book a little person? So I was going to the Little Persons Association and trying to contact people. I would Google news stories about little people and see if anybody was suing someone. And it never happened. Cut to a few years later, as I'm calling on claims and calling on claims, I get this person who is a little person. He is an exotic dancer. He has a foot fetish. And his name is Corn Pop. I was running through the office. I told my EP, I'm like, check it out. Guess what his name is? Corn Pop. Everyone's high-fiving me. People who were out at lunch who didn't hear about it came to my cubicle. They were like, oh, we heard you booked a little person stripper named Corn Pop. He used to call me all the time, you know, yo, yo, what's going on, Sharon? It's Corn Pop. And I'd go, oh, hey, what's up, Corn Pop? And everybody's heads would pop out of their cubicle and they'd start high-fiving me again. And then, you know, that's a case that's going to go to sweeps. You know, that's a case that's going to air when we're looking for ad dollars. And when you book a sweeps case, it's a big deal. You know, your boss is happy for you. The studio's happy for you. Everyone's, you know, saying good job, you know. And I like to do a good job no matter where I am. I like people to like me. It's why I'm a comedian. I'm filling that void. So there is, like, sometimes I get a thrill out of finding these, like, unique people that you didn't think existed. But other times, it's a soul crusher. When I'm talking to them, I don't really care about what they're suing for. I just want to know if they're colorful and passionate and are going to say lots of horrible things about each other. And once I get to that point, then I have to ask them for a picture because I want to see what they look like. And then I have to ask them if they have teeth. And that's very humiliating because they're like, well, why would you ask me that? And I'm like, well, we have to know. And they say, well, of course I have teeth. And I go, okay, well, send me a picture of just your teeth. And they're like, why do you need that? I said, well, because a lot of people, when I say a lot, I mean everyone, lies about having teeth. What happens is they say they have teeth, and then I say, well, I need a picture. Then they call me right before they send the picture and go, I forgot to tell you, I'm missing a front tooth. And sometimes they're missing all of them. And that's the one thing that people are always surprised about. They're like, wait a minute, it's the United States of America. People don't have teeth? And I'm like, yeah, they don't have teeth. I know the difference between meth mouth versus someone who smokes crack versus someone who just has bad dental hygiene because the teeth rot in a different way. But early in the process, the teeth just become kind of gray. And the only way that we can correct that is by painting them. And there's this stuff that you can get at a makeup supply store, and it kind of looks like liquid paper in person, but when it's on camera, it looks like they have sparkling white teeth. You and I might know what it's like to be broke. We don't know what it's like to be poor, and poor for generations. And the majority of the people we book on these shows, they're very poor. They can't afford a snack at the airport. They don't even own a car. I mean, the simplest things that we all do, they can't do because they just don't have the money. And it's a bummer. They usually try to steal the clothing after. We have to stand outside the dressing room and go, okay, I just want to make sure before you leave, I have to count and make sure the shoes are here. Is the belt here? Are the pants here? Is the shirt here? Did you return the wig? Can we have the earrings back? Okay, great. Now we can send you back to the airport. But for some reason, I think it's denial. They feel like something could change in their lives any day that would make their lives better. They have this like false hope. But I'm sitting here saying, you guys are in denial. I'm trying to make it in Hollywood. Who's in denial here? I mean, I have this job because it keeps a roof over my head, and I need new headshots, and I still have to pay for parking when I do spots at the store or the improv. And especially living in an expensive city like LA, I have nothing. I have nothing. But they think I am famous. They think I'm a rock star. They think I own a home. They think I have nice things. I'm like, no, I'm nothing. I didn't talk about working in court until like 3 years ago, and I've been doing it for 10. People ask me what I did, and I would rather say attempt because it was embarrassing. I mean, there's a hierarchy. It goes feature films, one-hour dramas, half-hour comedies, late night talk shows, music videos, commercials, daytime talk shows, reality TV, porn, snuff films, Jersey Shore, daytime court TV. So we're at the bottom. Sometimes I want to shake them and I want to do the face slap with the front of my hand and the back of my hand and go, what are you doing? Why are you doing this with your life? And I get really frustrated with them. I had this one litigant I booked who was so big I had to buy her 2 plane tickets. And she was really cool and funny, and she was a great, great guest. But when I met her, I was like, you know, why don't you lose weight? You know, I'm thinking, how can I intervene and get her to drop some weight? And I can't do that. That crosses a professional line. And then I had this other case with this really beautiful, smart, professional woman. She was suing this deadbeat boyfriend that she had move into her house. This creepy alcoholic who was like living in her basement. And this is the only time I ever broke that wall. And I said to her after a case, I said, you know, you're really beautiful and you don't need to put up with that. And you're smart and you make a good living and you own your own home. Please be done with him. And she looked at me and she was really angry. And she said, don't tell me what to do with my life. I love him. And I just was like, whoa, okay, fine. And then I realized, oh, wait a second. I've done that. Because, you know, my last boyfriend was actually living a double life. He was working during the day, and then he was never home at night saying that he was at work, but he was actually out having sex with strangers he met on websites. And then I called one of my girlfriends, and I said, here's what's happening. And she said, you call him and break up with him right now. And I said, should I wait till he gets home? He's running an errand. And she goes, nope, right now call him. So I called him, broke up with him, never came home. I never saw him again. And we lived together, so I had to get rid of his furniture, his clothes, and I was so mad at myself because I was like, why would you end up with someone like this? Like, what is your character defect that you thought this person was good for you? So when I look at these people and I'm like, why did you take so much crap from that guy? Or, you know, why did you let him borrow money when you knew he wasn't going to pay you back? And I look at myself and I go, oh, yeah, I know how this happens. For every one good story, funny story that you hear about 20 really, really sad ones. I had this one guy who was African and he had just moved here and he paid somebody a lot of money to help him get his visa. An attorney took his money, never returned his calls. He's like, please help me. And he was crying. And I could do nothing about it because you have to talk defendant into coming on the show. And if you're a company or an attorney, they will not risk it. Like in one case, I had an elderly man that was suing a company that took money from him and didn't provide him with the cancer treatment he needed. And he was crying and he's like, I'm going to die. Can you help me? And I'm like, no, I can't. And those are the things that just, you got to take your headset off, go to the bathroom and cry it out, go take a walk around the lot. That's the hardest part of the job. I just can't detach from these stories. The cases I really hate are the DNA cases. Court shows love DNA cases, so we do them a lot. And what I don't like about them is a lot of the times on these DNA cases, the kids are old enough to know, oh, something's up. This guy who I've been calling dad might not be my dad. And I think they should have the right to be told by their parents and not a TV show. And these cases are particularly hard for me because I found out that my dad wasn't my dad when I was 9 years old. It's a really difficult thing for a young kid to go through and to have that exploited on TV. I hate it. So sometimes the job gets really brutal and you listen to the sad stories all day and I just can't take it anymore and I reach a breaking point. My breaking point is taking half a Vicodin with 2 ibuprofen to take the edge off. And then I'll take a little nap under my desk for about 20 minutes, and then I pop back up, ready to roll. At the end of every season, I always go, I'm not going back. I don't want to go back. I'm never working in this genre again. And then a few months go by, and then I end up getting sucked right back in. It's almost like going back to this abusive boyfriend. Everyone who works in court always ends up going back. I always say it's like prison, and you just become a repeat offender. Like, you get out, you do your time, you get out, you're like, I'm free, I'm never doing that again, because that was a mistake. Then you screw up, or things aren't staffing, or, you know, you just always end up going back. Always. So, I'm not so different than the people I book on these shows. We're all on the same merry-go-round. Just different horses, different cities, different exterior. It's the same thing. It just goes and goes. And you're like, please, someone save me.